feel free to interrupt with questions. Just raise your hand, and we'll be relatively informal for this. And I'm getting over a cold, so I'm more than likely to break into a coughing fit in the middle of this thing, and I apologize in advance. So this is the pros and cons of hiring hackers. I'm Scott Blake, security program manager of the Razor team at Bindview Corporation. And so just to tell you a little bit about who I am and why I'm having this conversation, I'm, unlike many of my peers, not really trained in technology. My training is in sociology. I have a master's degree from Brandeis University and was almost ABD before I dropped out and decided to pursue a slightly more lucrative career. I'm also an employer of hackers. Most of the Razor team is people who would self-identify as hackers. And you'll get a little bit of sociology in this talk, and we'll talk a little bit about what self-identification means and some of the problems with that. I've been doing research in this field, in security. I manage a team of researchers, and I've also done a lot of research in sociology, obviously. As well as operational, by operations I mean IT. I've been a network manager, and I've been a security consultant as well, doing penetration testing, policy development, mostly for large financial companies and telecommunications companies. So I'm going to share with you some of my experiences with working with hackers, and what that means, and some lessons that hopefully will be useful for you. With that. So, what is a hacker? It's a problematic term, and I don't really want to get into the debates over what the term means, but I do want to just sort of define my terms a little bit so we can all be on the same page here. Okay? The first two points are probably the key definers of what a hacker is in my not very humble opinion. An out-of-the-box thinker. Somebody who does not necessarily subscribe to the assumptions that might be made by a systems designer or a developer or somebody who's designing a security infrastructure, for example. And this is one that I heard from somebody is a hacker is one who bends the computer to their will, which is sort of a holdover, as most of you probably know, from the days when computers really wouldn't do much of anything without someone who could really shape the thing quite a bit. That's to a lesser extent true now, although certainly there are problems with modern systems as well, although it's not quite the same thing. So that's the broad definition. Okay? And we'll tone that down a little bit and specify it a little bit more as we go along. Those of you who aren't familiar with some of the history, and I should point out actually that there was a great piece on a Canadian, I think it was the CBC website several months ago about the history of the word hacker, which apparently was invented by Shakespeare several hundred years ago, and referring to one who chops down trees and shapes wood, and you know hacking with an axe, right? And so I sort of have to chuckle every time somebody says, well, you know, the word originally meant anybody who could make the computer do stuff. And, well, originally, no. I mean, we could go back a little bit further than that. It's not quite so new of a word. But the point, nevertheless, is that the media largely, apologies to those of you who are in the media, if anyone, has essentially made the term synonymous with criminal, which most of us would probably disagree with rather strenuously. And we'll get to that in just a minute. And this thing about the hats, most of you are probably familiar with this. This is the black hat briefings. Ostensibly, the speakers are black hats who are giving their perspective on things to other people. who don't wear hats. But there's some texture to that as well. There's the idea of the white hat hacker or the ethical hacker, as well as the gray hat hacker, which is an interesting term. But basically is intending someone who uses the techniques of black hats, meaning that they are breaking into systems, but doing so for the betterment of the security community, which I'm sure some of you would think is a dubious proposition at best, but is nevertheless something that is a reality of the current situation. Okay, one term that a lot of people have kicked around as a counterpoint to the hacker term is the cracker term. Hacker good, cracker bad. Right? Crackers are people who break into stuff for bad reasons. And we can work with that. I can accept that as a postulate. But we're not really going to go there particularly in this talk. And also, of course, the script kid term, which I think we're probably all familiar with, referring to those who are just running scripts and not really creating new knowledge, which is another key point for understanding what a hacker is. It's somebody who's going to innovate in some way, to create new knowledge. Why would you want one? Presumably, there's some interest around here of why you might want to hire a hacker. It's what the point of the talk is, after all. And there are essentially three points, I think, to that idea. You need experienced security professionals. It's very important to have people who know what they're doing when you're trying to perform security functions and to secure your networks. Obviously, that's people who know how to defend networks and systems also. So those of us who come from a network background, I did a lot of network engineering in my consulting days, tend to think in terms of networks and data that's in transition, but the systems themselves are obviously very important as well. I don't need to dwell too much on that, I'm sure. Innovation and forward thinking, of course, are desirable. We like that. That's good. That's what hackers are all about, really, is innovating and creating new knowledge. So what might you want to hire one for? Well, security work, obviously, right? That's what we're all about here. Consulting and research are the two primary areas, but also system administration, implementation work, installing firewalls, installing IDS systems, rolling out your PKI, all that kind of buzzword compliant things that we all have to do. It's all very useful to have people who know what you're talking about. Okay. Where do you find one? An interesting question. You can look around and let's see. How many people in the audience would self-identify as a hacker? Just raise your hands, please. A few? Wait, raise your hands high. Be proud. Be proud. Yeah. Okay. Couple. Yeah. Good. Okay. So Black Hat is a good place to do some recruiting, and I understand that the recruiting is quite hot and heavy in the hallways, and there were a couple of parties last night for companies that were trying to schmooze potential employees. That's cool. It's definitely a good place to go. Other security conferences, if you're looking for people who are more in the script kid side of things, you can go to DEF CON or H2K. You'll get some serious people there as well, but not nearly as many. IRC is an interesting forum and is a possible way to gather up folks. What you're going to find, though, if you start investigating IRC, is that most of the people who are online are kids. They're not generally the more serious professionals, or if they are using IRC, they're not using it in ways that you would be able to identify them as hackers. So I would personally rather downplay that as a recruiting forum. Most of the people who you're going to be interested in hiring are not going to be found on IRC, at least not as such. Poaching from other companies is a tried and true method of hiring experienced people. Consulting houses that actually advertise the fact that they hire hackers, such as AtStake, Rent-A-Hacker, etc. There are several others. There are also a wide variety of security consulting companies that don't advertise that they hire hackers, but largely you'll find that their staff is populated by people who would, in fact, self-identify as hackers, or at least as ex-hackers. Universities are also an interesting interesting place to go. And I would, however, encourage you to focus more on graduate programs than undergraduate programs if you're looking for employees. Okay? Now, this is the part where we start getting into a little bit of sociology. Okay? Hackers are individuals, right? Individuals are good, right? Nevertheless, generalization is a valid technique for doing social science, which is what sociology is. And there are certain trends that you can identify in groups of people. And those trends can be more and less useful with a lot of variety in what those would be. Just a couple of quick points on some observations on trends amongst hackers. The idea about the hackers being teenage boys is largely a myth. Most of the hackers who are worth employing are significantly older than their teens. There are useful people who are young, don't get me wrong, but that's largely, and young is all relative, right? when I say young, I'm talking about like not old enough to buy themselves a beer. Okay, if they're old enough to buy themselves a beer, they're still young potentially, but that's not the category that we're talking about in this context. Okay, gender largely male. Just look around here. We have a couple of women in the audience, but not very many, and that's true of the conference at large. Although that's been changing over time, which I think is a fantastic trend. Yay. But generally speaking, you're talking about guys, mostly white. That's a demographic that's true across the United States. Actually, most of the United States is made up of white people, such as they are, and so that's a trend that's reflected in hackers as well, because hackers are, after all, Americans for our purposes here anyway. We're international stuff is a whole other kettle of fish, and we're not going to go there today. Class, generally speaking, hackers come from affluent backgrounds. And by affluent, I'm basically speaking to the upper half of the income spread in the United States, which means a family income in the neighborhood of greater than $50,000 to $60,000 a year at current numbers. And that's not all that surprising when you think about it, when the computer ownership in the United States is largely the upper half of the income spectrum. And so that would be where the exposure comes from, where people have the opportunity, to have those things. So the idea here in understanding the differences between individuals and groups and trends is to start setting expectations, and this is primarily your expectations, as to what you're going to find and what you might be able to predict. Okay? Prediction is the goal of science, as a rule, and that's even true among the softer sciences. Understanding some of those trends and the groupings that might be relevant will help you to understand what kinds of things to look for, and also can serve as a flag for you of whatever context when something doesn't match your expectation. Okay, if you're predicting that a hacker is going to be someone in there, the kind of person that you're going to want to hire is going to be somebody who's male, white, from an affluent background, and in their mid-20s to mid-30s, if you identify somebody who doesn't fit that profile, that's worth noticing. Okay? I'm not saying that that's exclusionary in any way, but it is worth noticing that and identifying what's going on there. Okay? There may be good or bad reasons for that mismatch, and it's something that you'll want to be able to investigate. So, the pros, what we all came here for. Okay? Hackers are, by and large, bright, creative people. Right? Bright, creative people are good. That's what we like. They're the people who are going to create a lot more value than people who are dull and uncreative. And that's what you're always looking for in an employee. Many are not motivated by money. Now, don't get me wrong. That doesn't mean that you can pay them squat. Okay, that mean, in fact, they will command top dollar in most cases. However, that's not why they're going to get up in the morning, by and large. It's not why they're going to show up for work. It's not why they're going to do good things. And it's an extremely important point to remember as we get into retention issues a little bit later. Okay. Hackers are, by and large, highly motivated to learn. Okay. Which is fantastic. The technology is developing at an extremely fast rate. Things are changing. Security issues are changing all the time. And you want people who are going to be able to keep up with that and, more than being able to keep up with it, are going to be able to want to keep up with it, are going to be motivated by themselves to go out and do the extra things that are required to keep up with the technology. Okay. They tend to be highly productive. And that's obviously good. Production, good. Okay. In touch with the latest trends, often through social networks, although not always through social networks. Sometimes it's just through various methods. But keeping up with the latest stuff is very important in a high-speed changing environment. Some of the in the top three environments where you would want to use hackers. Some pros. In research environments, they will require very little supervision. Okay? And that's an outstanding feature. You want to have people who are going to be self-starters, who are going to take the initiative to go the extra step in these kinds of things and think for themselves. That's great. Okay? Operations is great. And I gave the flip side of this talk at Hope 2000 a couple of weeks ago. And talked about why would a hacker want to be in an operational environment? The main reason there is it's data rich. There's all sorts of stuff happening, particularly in a larger organization. There are incidents that they have to respond to. There's forensics duties to take care of. There are changing network architectures that need to be responded to, planned for, built up, and this changing contour can be very, very fun. Consulting is fairly obvious. You can both scare and impress your customers, which is, after all, what consultants are in the business of doing. The cardinal rule of consulting is get the follow-on business, right? So you don't really want to actually solve all of their problems, at least not without also creating the need for future things. And in most large organizations, again, since things are changing at a fairly rapid pace, I'm alienating a couple of guys back there, I can see. that's going to be a constant anyway. You're going to need to have follow-on business on a fairly regular basis. But you always want to be able to scare them with the new stuff that's happening, and that's good. We like fear, uncertainty, and doubt, right? The cons. It may be hard to focus a hacker on what you want them to do. Go figure. They are, by and large, bright, creative people. Bright, creative people like to do what they like to do. And as long as what they like to do is what you want them to be doing, then you're all set. But if it isn't, then you may have an issue. And this may be a con. Okay? The youngsters, and again, by the youngsters, we're basically talking about people who can't buy their own beer, will require a lot of supervision. I can attest to that from experience. in a lot of different fronts, mostly having to do with work ethic, wandering attention, and the like. Okay? Some, and I hesitated to point this to put this point on here, because it's not broad, but it is. There is a notable minority within the hacker community that has very poor communication skills in one or more of the three areas that I've identified here: oral communication, written communication, and process communication. And by process communication, I'm talking about dealing with the corporate environment, dealing with working within a project, working within a set of tasks that need to be accomplished in sequential order. Preferably, peer review may not be something that it wants to happen, and it plays directly into the last point here, which is that damn superior attitude, which so many of them have. As well, you should. Thank you. Yes, very, very true. It can, however, be an impediment in certain working environments. One of the cons that I listed to the kids at Hope 2000 for doing operational work. is that the vast majority of their customers are going to be extremely ignorant, and they're going to find that very frustrating. This is where that damn superior attitude can really come into play. There will be a tendency for people to take a sort of cowboy approach to things, to go off and do something that they think is really cool, which might in fact be really cool, and often is, and that's great, but it may not also. It may turn out to be a complete dead end for whatever you were trying to do, even though it was still cool, but didn't necessarily have a lot of business value, shall we say. And that cowboyness can be something that you want to keep an eye on. Continuing on with some of the cons, they do have a tendency to see things in black and white. There's a strong tendency amongst technical people in general, I think, less having to do with hackers in particular than with technical people in general, to like neat boxes that things can be fit into. Good and bad are you know, things that will be very quick to be judged. Don't tend to be particularly tolerant of some of the gray areas in modern life, right? Which ties actually into the third point of politics. There's a very strong libertarian tendency amongst hackers. Not that any of you would have guessed that, I'm sure. Sorry?
As well
there should be, this was the comment. I'm not going to touch that one. it can be, how can I put this, difficult to deal with that in certain environments. It may not be wholly appropriate in a corporate environment for the religious pursuit of absolute constitutional rights. And I think that might be a good thing for us to talk about in the question and answer session at the end, if you have any more questions of things that you might be. Anyway, pursuing dead end directions too long, I alluded to a little bit earlier. There's a part of this tendency to see things in black and white, and in terms of their inherent technical challenge and technical benefit, can lead to the pursuit of business issues or the pursuit of technical issues beyond their business utility. And an example of that would be a research project that doesn't ever connect up to whatever it is that a company is doing for their profit motive. I can give you some examples of that if people are interested. Smelling snake oil can be really difficult for consulting and product companies in particular. They will tend to have a low tolerance for software that doesn't exactly do what the marketing people would like to say that it does. And for providing consulting services that are more geared toward follow-on business than for the betterment of humanity. I call that a con. Yeah, the question is, do I call that a con? I call that a con from the business point of view. Businesses would really much rather be able to pass off their snake oil on everyone, including their employees, than have it challenged in the vast majority of cases. If they're doing competitive intelligence, it can be useful. in most cases, it is actually not useful for that. Followed on with the tendency to see things in black and white, where the snake oil is categorized as bad. Right. No. Key concerns, and this is one that is an interesting topic to talk about, and one that I get asked by the press on a fairly regular basis how can you let them in to do this stuff? Isn't this the bringing in the wolf to watch the chickens? Or I was talking to a British guy this morning, bringing in the poacher for the gameskeeper, watching over the game warden. The poacher knows where all the animals are and what their patterns are and how to find them, which is exactly what you want in your game warden. But poacher generally has a indicated tendency toward, shall we say, bending the rules a little bit, which is an association that is very often made with hackers, particularly those who are wearing the gray or black hat moniker. But fundamentally, trustworthiness amongst the hacker community is absolutely no different from trustworthiness amongst the population as a whole. You take any cross section of any group within a society or a culture, and there's going to be some percentage of people who are not trustworthy, and the vast majority are going to be trustworthy. And that's no different with hackers. However, it is more of an issue with the youngsters, largely because they don't tend to communicate very much with their employers, and I'll come to that point again in a minute. But also because, as I say up here, they have less to lose. They'll tell you my joke that I'm passing around here. What's the difference between a white hat hacker and a black hat hacker? $100,000 a year is the guess. That's not my answer, though. My answer is a mortgage, right? Because I think actually that the salary is important, but in a certain way it's sort of easier to give up than your home. And often along with the mortgage, in many cases, comes the wife and kids, who have certain expectations about continued employment and so forth. Not even necessarily continued employment at a given level, but the ability to pay the mortgage is right up there on the priority list. So that's my joke for the presentation. I won't have any more jokes for you. How do you decide on an individual basis, right? Well, we've established that the group of being a hacker is not going to do you very much good in deciding whether or not somebody is trustworthy. So the way that you decide is the same way you decide for anybody else. You check your references. You do a background check. You do all of the things that you would normally do when you're hiring somebody, particularly somebody who's going to be in a security-sensitive role, right, which is often a higher standard than somebody who is not in a security-sensitive role. You may also want to use some particular techniques, such as IRC, especially for youngsters. If you're going down that road, there are going to be people out there who know what's going on, and this is hearsay, right? So you take it all with a grain of salt. But the single best thing you can do to address the concern is to talk to them about it. Perish the thought, but you could actually say, "So, look, you know, you say you're a hacker. There's all this stuff in the media about hackers. Talk to me. What do you think? Do you think this stuff, you know, and what you're looking for in this conversation is the person getting defensive, right? Are they gonna come back and say, well, you're an asshole for asking me that question, right? Or are they gonna say, you're right, the media does portray us in this way, and there are reasons why the media portrays us in this way, and here's why those reasons are wrong. Reasonable communication amongst adults. I know it's a crazy thought, okay? But ultimately you need to make a judgment call, and that's why managers get the big bucks. So, if there is a problem, and because you did all the right things but still didn't quite manage to catch somebody, how are you going to know? Almost certainly, particularly in an operational environment, if you're hiring a hacker, this guy is going to be the person, most likely a guy, who knows your security systems better than anybody else. Probably has root access on most of the important systems, probably has permissions to look at the audit logs, modify the firewall rules, look at the intrusion detection systems, and so forth, add users. Note point two, yeah, if you've got somebody who's really worth having, who's a really valuable asset to your organization, you will never know. That's life. Okay. It goes to trust. You've got to have it. If you don't have it, then you're wasting your time. Okay. An important thing to remember is that you are the man in the employment of this person here, as I am, as probably most of you are. We are either an instantiation of the man, or to a greater or lesser extent. This is the title of the talk I gave at H2K, by the way, was Selling Out: The Pros and Cons of Working for the Man. The man is pretty much anybody when you really come down to it. It's obviously the government, right? There are the if you want to think of an example of what constitutes the establishment, well, the government is basically it. I mean, that's obvious, right? And I encourage anyone who disagrees to discuss it with me after when we get to the question and answers. Profit motive companies invariably are the man. It's capitalism at its finest, and that's the profit motive is at least honest about itself, like, shall we say. But also, if you really dig down into it, universities and other places that are not for profit will be beholden to places that are for profit for their funding, or to the government for their funding, and thus have the same kinds of concerns that you're going to find in other places. And so, when it really comes down to it, if you're accepting a paycheck, you're probably working for the man. That's the odds are extremely good. Okay. So, retention issues for your hackers that you've just hired. It's a very, very hot job market. Is there anybody here? Let's just do a quick show of hands. Who got recruited at the conference? Raise your hand. Anybody who was approached to work at another company? Few hands, not too many. No, not as many as I expected. Okay, we'll talk after this. After the talk, here. Sorry, I'm hiring. So if you're interested, drop off a resume afterwards. Security people are getting big money. It is very, very hot. Nobody in the security market who's worth anything is going to be unemployed for any longer than they want to be, and they will probably be able to command the kind of salary that they will be able to enjoy and raise their families and send their kids to college without a heck of a lot of difficulty, unless they're in the government. But they won't stay there for very long in many cases unless they have a mission. So it's also These are things that are going to lure people away from you, by the way, particularly if you're in the government. The private industry is going to be luring your people away in a big way. The volatility of the stock market also, if your stock tanks, people tend to be fairly short-sighted about the stock market. But I don't know, if you sort of think it through, when the company's stock is low, that's the worst possible time to leave. Because if you're going to cash out your options, then you're going to cash them out for very little, and you have to exercise within certain period of time between termination of the employment. So you really want to quit when the stock is high, right? So you can cash out your options and get your big paycheck. But whatever, whenever the stock is low, everybody wants to leave. So I don't know why, but that's the case. They're free spirits. And that refers, there's sort of a double entendre there. Recruiting parties and so forth often include free spirits and, you know, beer and wine and so forth. But hackers in particular are free spirits in their persons as well. I promised no more jokes, but couldn't quite resist the pun. They will want to wander. They will get tired of one thing without too much prompting. And it's something you need to be aware of for retention. So these are the points of things that are going to take them away. What are you going to do to keep them? Well, the same thing you do to keep anybody else. You have to keep them happy, and you keep them happy by providing them with interesting and challenging work, and preferably not being too much like the man. Right. An important point is how to fire a hacker. Okay. Actually, a friend of mine does a whole thing on hiring, firing not only hackers but IT professionals in general, it's a very, very interesting talk, and it's a very interesting topic. But these three points will serve you in good stead. Carefully, you need to plan. Right? Think about what it is you're going to do and what the impact of that is going to be. Think about why you're letting the person go and whether or not they're going to be pissed. Good thing to do. When you do it, you want to be especially decent. You're, aside from the fact that you want to be decent whenever you're firing any human being who has thoughts and feelings and whatever, it's just sort of the civil thing to do. But you want to be especially careful when there's that somebody might come back and get you. Most of us probably sitting in this room have the knowledge to do that. Certainly everybody in the next room over has the knowledge to do that. So if you need to let them go, then you need to be aware that's going to happen. or not that it's going to happen, but that it's a possibility, and that you can increase or decrease that possibility by the way in which you do this, okay? Dramatically. Communication, I keep coming back to this, it's the adult thing to do, but to actually say, it is that you're a jerk, and because you never show up for work and you don't do anything, and, well, frankly, I hate your guts. That's probably not going to be especially productive. Doing something that might be a little bit more productive, assuming that is the fact, right, would be to take a different approach and maybe take it into budget cuts or do it with positive recommendations. You know, obviously, this is not going to be something that's coming out of the blue if this is the case, or it better not be something that's coming out of the blue. Okay? The first time that your employee, and this goes for any employee, I would hope that you would all know this, the first time that they hear that something is wrong with their employment stat, with their your assessment of their performance should not be when you tell them to get outside, that they're going to, that they're being escorted from the premises. Okay? That's bad. That's not a civil way to do things. Okay. I don't want to dwell on that too much. So we'll just wrap this up here, and we'll go to questions, because I'm pretty sure that there are some. So understand your problem. And this is a deeply textured point, actually. Understanding your problem is, why are you hiring a hacker? What do you think that they're going to do for you? How have you structured things so that this is going to help you in some way? What do you want them to do? These are all aspects of understanding your problem. Know what you're looking for, which is sort of fundamentally the same thing as understanding your problem. Are you looking for some guy who can crack into your web server just because they feel the need to do so? That's probably not what you're really looking for. What you're really looking for is somebody who can provide you with business continuity, with taking away the ability of other people to do these trivial things that the script kids are so often doing. And that's a more complicated, it requires a richer breadth of experience on the part of the employee. Right? And communication, I just can't stress that one enough. It's so important and it's so rare. I don't know about what your experiences are, but it has certainly been my experience that people are very reluctant to be honest in their communications, particularly when in a business environment. They would really much rather convince you that it's all for your own good or the betterment of humanity or whatever, and most of the time we all know that's horse feathers or something. Okay? So anyway, that's the end of the talk. Do we have any questions? Yeah. The comment here is that correct me if I'm not understanding, is that in some environments, actually somebody who has a hacker background is going to be more trustworthy than other people because of the financial motivation that
because they're
less motivated by money, they're less likely to steal money. Yeah. Embezzlement and so forth, right? Yeah, I would be inclined to agree with that. Now, you started off by saying that should be listed as one of the cons.
No, you mentioned it. Trustworthiness.
Oh, that trustworthiness is one of the cons. I see. Right. I see.
I'm not sure that. I think it's one of the things you have to evaluate. If I was a government person thinking about it, I might be twice. If I was a company providing financial services.
Right.
Hey, you know, these guys may really be motivated.
Right. The point is being made that a government agency, for example, might really want to consider very carefully before hiring a hacker, whereas a small financial services company would probably think that would probably be very motivated and would be in positively to hire somebody to provide those kind of services. And I would be inclined to agree, but I would be hesitant. I think we have a confounding variable, which is the politics. I mean, you know, just think about it for a second. No matter what role you're trying to fill in the government, do you really want to hire an anarchist? Right, or a libertarian for that matter. Somebody, I mean, do you really want to hire somebody to be a leading bureaucrat in the IRS who fundamentally believes that the IRS is stealing from the people of the United States?
We had lost an employee, a very skilled employee, because I work for a financial institution, and they suggested they didn't keep track of who did it. It was to go out to the Securities and Exchange website and write a letter supporting that they raise the IRA limit, okay, to allow it to go up to $5,000. Mm-hmm. And this person quit explicitly because they did not want to have any, they didn't want to be involved with a company that would try and impact political change in that way. Mm-hmm. You know, who would support.
Right. So, if I could paraphrase for the people who can't hear, you're making the point, I think, that politics is a relevant issue for anybody, not necessarily having to do with hackers, but it's something that you want to keep in mind with any employee. Is that a fair characterization? Okay. Yeah.
Hi.
Okay, I can tell everyone heard the question, but I think I need to repeat it for the recording. The question is, what's my view on hiring convicted persons of not necessarily felonies, but misdemeanors presumably as well, and also persons who should have been convicted but weren't. The simple answer is it needs to be handled on a case-by-case basis, right? But that's really a cop-out. Right? Fundamentally, it would definitely be probably two strikes in a three-strike process for the evaluation of whether or not to hire somebody. Okay? I mean, one of the things that is a fundamental in evaluating people, right, is what have they done? What is their record? Okay. I would not categorically rule out somebody who had been convicted, nor somebody who had demonstrably done something bad. Okay. But it had better be a damn good explanation. Okay, and it would need to be followed up in a lot of detail. I would want to do very extensive interviews, very extensive reference checking, you know, double everything that you would do for a normal person, for somebody else. Okay, because you're taking a bigger risk. That's a fact. Okay. And it may be very unfortunate in a particular case that it is a bigger risk, but the general trend, nevertheless, you can't ignore that. Okay. You're next. Go ahead. Yeah.
Would you prefer to hire a self-retained candidate with, say, 2 years of campaigning experience as compared to someone who's had a job experience, sustained job experience in the CISSP?
The question, if I may paraphrase roughly, is somebody who self-identifies as a hacker. My hiring preference is somebody who self-identifies as a hacker with a couple of years of experience versus somebody who has network engineering, system administration, and a CISSP background, which I'm gathering is sort of how do I, the essence of the question is how would I personally compare the CISSP accreditation versus real-world hacking experience, right? Okay. You guys always ask me the easy questions. I think that the CISSP is useful for certain environments. and in other environments is not especially useful. The indication, what the CISSP certification is saying, right, is that this person has a broad array of knowledge about the common body of knowledge that that has been defined, the ISC 2 or 3 or whatever it is, has defined as being the common body of knowledge for security professionals. And it's largely based on mil-spec stuff, military specifications and, you know, filling your Ethernet conduits with HALON and stuff like that. And a lot of it is useful as well, don't get me wrong. But you're also suppositing that this person has some real-world experience. So my point of comparison would be the real-world experience versus the real-world experience, and not certification versus no certification. In my opinion, a CISSP is not going to count for much. And no certification would count for much. MCSE doesn't count for much. Whatever you want to say, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't count for squat. PhD in computer science doesn't count for anything. What I'm interested in is what the person has done, and what is the evaluation based on what they've done of what they're going to do. Are they going to be adding value? Now, in some places, at larger organizations, especially that are credential happy, right, they're not going to take that kind of evaluation. The CISSP will count for a lot regardless. So my recommendation would be anybody out in the audience who has 2 years of hacking experience should go get yourselves a CISSP as well. Why not? Right? Does that adequately answer your question? Okay, thanks. Yeah?
How would you recommend that a company who provides third-party services justify the hiring of hackers to their clients?
Yeah. The question is, how would I recommend justifying the hiring of hackers by a company that provides services to their clients, say an outsourced security company, a product company, or a consulting company, anything. So, your Fortune 100 customer comes to you and says, "So I hear you guys hire hackers. That means we're not going to buy any products from you." What's the response, right? The response can be a couple of different things, and it depends a lot on sort of the interaction that you're in at the time, obviously. But in the most verbosity that I will have here, the response that you would want to have is to first off identify what you mean by hacker, and if they're asking the question, typically they're under the misconception that a hacker is a criminal, right? And you may, depending on the circumstances of the particular employees in question, be able to say, "Well, you know, you're coming in here with an assumption that hackers are criminals, and our employees are not criminals. We do not hire convicted felons." You may be able to say something like that, or "We do not hire people who have been convicted of computer crimes." That can be very reassuring. Okay, you don't want to say that if it's not true, though. In a lot of cases, it will be true, and it would probably be desirable, particularly in a business environment, that it is true. The caveats of my previous answer notwithstanding on that. And that may be enough. If it's not enough, then you need to spell out exactly what it is that you've brought them on for, what value that they are providing to the company, which in turn is being provided to the customer. And if you don't have an answer to that, then you probably shouldn't have them on your payroll. If you don't have an answer to that question, being able to say, "We've hired this person who is a famous hacker because they have done this work and this work and this work, and it has benefited you, our customer, in this way and this way," then you probably want to steer clear of the whole topic and not get involved in the first place, because it goes to my conclusion point here of understanding your problem, right? Why is it that you're trying to hire a hacker? And if you don't have a good answer to that question, then you probably don't want to do it. More questions? Yeah. Uh, The question is, are there examples of somebody who has been a self-identified hacker subsequently doing something for which was a firing or convicting offense later on? And I see people in the audience nodding their heads. I do not have firsthand knowledge of that, but I don't doubt that that's the case for a variety of reasons. Not the least of which is that most people don't really take that much caution when they're hiring people in doing background checks and really evaluating a person on their own terms, which is really what you need to do in making any hiring decision. So the people who are nodding their heads, can you share? Yeah.
1997.
The answer was 1997, one of the big five consulting firms hired a third-party independent consultant with a reputation of being a hacker to be involved in a gig they were doing at a large financial company. Quote, things happened, it was bad. And it was in the press, but I missed it. So. The question is, if there aren't that many examples, why do we have this presupposition that something might happen? There are a couple of answers to that. One is that however much we may rebel against it, the fact of the image being out there in the media that hacker equals criminal will have an effect on all of us. To a greater or lesser extent. It may be a very small extent, but that little, the seed of doubt is planted. And it's going to be there no matter how much you want to say that it's not there. So that's probably part of it. That's a big part of it, probably. The statistics would certainly show that there are far more information security breaches that come from people who do not self-identify as hackers. The CSI FBI statistics are, what is it this year, 65% of information security breaches are from insiders, and the vast majority of those are made through mistake or accident. Right? Those are not hackers, but they are the ones who are causing the vast majority of the financial loss that's resulting from information security breaches. Right? And if it is a mistake or an accident, then the fact that they're a hacker is probably not relevant anyway. Right? I mean, if you didn't do it on purpose, then your skills don't really count, I don't think. So I think that's probably is that a satisfactory answer for you? Let me add to my original answer, actually. Part of that is the self-identification point, which I forgot to get into. Pardon me for that. Which is that everybody who self-identifies as a hacker, I would not consider a hacker. Okay? There are a lot of people, in fact, who self-identify as hacker that I would personally consider to be script kids. Or worse. And so the self-identification issue is really key here. Just because somebody sends in a resume and says on their objective point line of their resume, I want to get a job as a professional hacker because I am a hacker, doesn't make them a bright, creative person. It doesn't make them somebody who's going to create new knowledge. It doesn't make someone who can bend the computer to their will. It doesn't make them somebody who is worth hiring, necessarily. Let me give you an anecdote from sociology. Okay? 98% of Americans self-identify as being members of the middle class. Okay? This includes income ranges from essentially nothing, well into the upper six figures. Okay? Why is this? Okay? Americans, as a rule, believe that we are all normal, that we are all relatively average, and that this is a desirable thing. And therefore, we are in the middle class. The great body of America is the middle class, okay? When in point of fact, okay, if you are making six figures, for example, or even actually it's around $90,000 a year, you are in the upper 10% of the income distribution within the United States, okay? That makes you a rich person relative to everybody else, okay? So you may self-identify as being middle class, but an objective observer will identify you as being in the upper class just because statistically you're in the upper 10%. Right? Now you can redefine that as 20%, 15%, 10%, 5% rather, whatever you want to do. Wherever you draw that line, no matter what it is, unless you draw it at the upper 2%, which is really, really rich people, I might add, you're going to be mis-self-identifying. Okay? And the same holds true at the lower end of the spectrum as well. Okay? The poverty line for a family of four in the United States this year, I think, is $16,000, $17,000 a year. I don't know if anybody here has ever tried to raise a family of four on $16,000 or $17,000 a year, but it's hard. It's not a lot of money. And an objective observer, again, would typically classify people who are below the poverty line as being poor. Yet, the vast majority of them self-identify as being middle class. Okay? So there's a problem there with self-identification, and self-identification is actually probably the least reliable measure of figuring out what people do. My own area of study, actually, as a sociologist, was primarily in gender studies, and there are some great stories about people who would say things like, "Yeah, my wife and I, we split the housework 50-50 right down the middle." And when you go and then observe what they're doing, what that means is that she does the second floor of the house that's split level ranch, and he does the lower half of the house, which is the basement and the garage, and she does the floors and the cooking and does all of the laundry because the laundry facilities are up on the second floor, and does all the vacuuming and the dusting and all of the traditional women's work stuff of the housework, and he's still doing the traditional men's work. And so the 50-50 characterization may not necessarily be the best characterization of what there is actually happening there, right? So I've gone long-winded on the self-identification thing. If anyone wants to follow up on that, they're welcome to. Or other questions? Yes?
I also wondered, is there any discussion in the IT community and tech community as well about changing the use of the word hacker? I mean, hacker now has become so associated with the public mind and the media with criminal behavior, and you have such deep resentment in the hacker community that this association, right and wrong, exists.
The question is, why continue to, correct me, I'm just paraphrasing again. The question is, why continue to use a term that has such bad associations in the vast majority of people's minds? Why not pick another term, right? Why continue to use this thing when it is doing us harm as a community? I think there are a lot of reasons for it. I think that it is also a trend that you could observe not only in the hacker community but in other groups whose identifying monikers have become associated with bad things. And I think we could probably all think of examples that are typically considered rude to use in public without too much difficulty. But the groups, the people who are actually members of those groups, will use them to self-describe. And will use them amongst themselves with pride. Part of the pride that is derived from using those terms is precisely the opposition to them. It's been observed by a large number of psychologists and sociologists that the distinctions between us and them are useful to us for building up self-image, for building up confidence in a variety of other soft things. And this is a case of that. I think that hackers wear the term proudly and like to be identified as a misunderstood group because that they can draw strength from that, from precisely that misunderstanding. If it was a political movement and with a marketing department, we'd drop it like a hot potato, right? Because marketing departments don't like this kind of stuff, but it's not. It's not really a political movement, although there are certainly some strains of that, especially within certain subgroups, but it really isn't. We certainly don't have a marketing department. that negative connotation is really it's a countercultural thing. Any more questions? Okay, thanks for coming.